What I wanted to do at the end of every shiur is to talk about Gadol B'Yisrael that I believe has been overlooked. And I'll tell you why he's been overlooked. In the 20th century in America, there were various great Gedolim that functioned. And I think that because of one who was a bosom buddy of the one I want to speak about, the one I want to speak about was overlooked. And the one I want to speak about is Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zichrono Levracha. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, who was born in the 1800s, towards the end of the 1800s, into the 20th century, died in 1986, was a bosom buddy of Rav Moshe Feinstein. They loved each other. But because Rav Moshe Feinstein was who he was, I believe that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was a bit overshadowed. And he was a great Gadol B'Yisrael. And the reason I want to speak about him is because I was intrigued by why he can teach us. Because he was taught, he was called by many Haredi Gedolei Yisrael, meaning his peers, the Normalisha Gaon, the normal Gaon. And the word normal is a very provocative term today, but basically what they meant was, even though he was who he was natural, he was normal. And the reason he was normal was because he was a Kluger Yid. He gave great advice, knowing how to give a tailored advice for Arthur, which would have been different from the tailored advice he'd give Rabbi Lewis, which would be different than Bennett, which would be different than everyone, because he happened to be normal. He didn't just say, when bad things happened, he didn't just say, learn more Torah. He knew for each person it means something else. And therefore, I want to speak about him a bit, because I think he was overshadowed, and for good reasons. We, Baruch Hashem, had our Rav Moshe Feinstein, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think we deserve to give him a bit of credit. Now, who was he? And I'm basing myself on 2.5 books. Why do I say 2.5 books? The first book is an art scroll book called Reb Yaakov. I don't have the cover anymore because I've read this so many times. The cover eventually comes off. The second book is called B'Mechitzat Rabbeinu, and it looks like this. The difference between the two books are very interesting. On this book, you have a Reb Yaakov smiling. And on this book, it looks like he's not smiling. Okay? My son, who's in the army, told me something interesting, Motzei Shabbos. He says that the Bretzlever way of life, as you know, is to say, Ten chiyuch, everything's going to be fine. And then he says, in a certain yeshiva shav, we may nameless, the slogan is, put on a terrible down face, everything is complex. So, based on that, as you could see, the author of this book versus the author of this book portrayed Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky behetem to the picture. And this one, he's a litvak, he has positions, and positions that are against, and he can care less, because a litvak says, I'm right and everyone's stupid. And in this book, he comes out to be a nice guy.
What's the title of it?
This book, Reb Yaakov.
What's the title?
Yeah.
Not the Making of a
Gadol? No, that's what I meant, 2 books. Now there's 2.5 books, I said. What's the half book? The half book is a book called Making of a Gadol, which is an amazing, amazing, not book, it's a study. It's an amazing study. It was done by Rav Natan Kamenetsky, Zichrono Levracha, who was the son of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rosh Hashiva in Itri. Rav Natan Kamenetsky wrote a book that is not a book that we're used to today because it was very honest. Honest means that not only did he write a book with references, meaning the book itself is nothing, the text, but there's basically footnotes that go are far bigger than the text. He wrote a book that ultimately was so honest that he put in stories that many people don't want you to know about rabbis. Which leads into a question that I think we have to deal with, and I'll say it very briefly. There was another Gadol in America. We mentioned Rav Moshe Feinstein. We mentioned Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. There was a third. Have you heard of Rav Yitzchak Kuttner? We won't deal with him today, but he has an amazing, amazing letter that was published in the Pachad Yitzchak and his series of sichot and letters, in which he says all the Gdolim books are making a big mistake. What is their big mistake? They portray the Gdolim as perfect. Their teeth have always white, their tipas don't come off the head. What would have been nice was that if Arthur would have read that Rav Moshe Feinstein ran away from school from time to time, and he broke a law or two, and despite it all, he became a Gadol B'Yisrael, then Arthur would say, hey, I did that. I also ran away from school. I also broke a law or two. I fractured a law or two. Maybe I could become a Gadol. On the other hand, if you say he's perfect, I'm never going to be perfect. I don't know Shas when I was 5. I didn't get married when I was 10. I didn't get Smicha when I was 15. So what does this have to do with me? That's Rav Yitzchak Kuttner's letter. On the other hand, you have the point of view taken by a certain I would say, genre of putting out books about Gedolim. We won't mention which. I'm just looking at a certain part of the bookcase and saying, take a look. They basically say, no, we are going to tell people what they should hear about the Gedolim. And if we have to from time to time lie, we will. Because we don't want them to necessarily know the truth. We want them to know what we want them to know. So therefore, their teeth are always white, their kippah is always on their head. We're going to leave out those stories. Now, why do I say making of a gadol is half? First of all, it was written in a very interesting way. There's barely any text, and there's a lot of footnotes, which are excellent. Number two, to get that book today, you have to be a millionaire, because that book was put in Chayrim. The minute a book is put in Chayrim, you have it. Wow.
My tenant was walking, I'm walking into the house, back in Brooklyn, my tenant was walking to the garbage with a whole bunch of books. And he collects books.
Every book
he gets it, whether he reads it or not.
Right.
So I said, what are you doing? He says, oh, I was told by my rabbi I have to throw these books out. What do you mean you have to throw these books out? He says, these books are in Chayrim, they're Usser. I said, I'll take them. He said, I can't give them to you. I said, what do you mean you can't? They're in Chayrim.
Yeah.
I ended up with a whole bunch of books that were put into Chayrim.
Do you have extra copies to this day? Wow. So you have one of the copies. I have certain parts of it, but a copy I don't have, because by the time I found out about it, it was put in Chayrim and it was $500 on eBay. And I didn't have $500 to buy the book. In any case, that book is definitely very important to understand Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. I would say the most important. But as I said, it's not readily available. So if these classes in some way or another want to motivate you to know more about him, then I think making of a gadol outside of borrowing it from Arthur, which I may do, is going to be difficult for you to come by. On the other hand, these two are available. Now, who was Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky and what do we learn from him? I'm not here to give a biography. If you want to know an extensive biography, it's very easy to find online. I'm here to give what we can learn from him. So let's start with the most simplest lesson, being cynical. Part of the Lithuanian world in which he grew up, in which many of us, the yeshivas we went to are part of, is to be cynical. To be cynical means to give quips. Now, there's two kinds of cynical. One cynical I don't like is to put down the other person. That is disgusting. That's not nice. But the other one is to make the other person laugh. And putting a smile on a Jew, the Gemara says when you make a Jew's teeth look white, namely you put a smile, is important. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was a very sharp person, yet a very nice person. Namely, he wasn't cynical in the negative sense, but in the positive sense. So he grew up in a very small town, and as was the custom in those days, they saw this kid is going to be a Talmid Chacham, they sent him away. So at 12, they packed him a suitcase, and they sent him away to a bigger town called Minsk, from where he lived. Now, I just want to let you know, there were more yeshivas in Minsk than there was in Vilna. It has happened to be a bigger town. We think of Vilna as the Yerushalayim of Lithuania. It could be, it was, but in terms of size, Minsk was a more modern city and was bigger. So they sent him along to Minsk, and in their suitcase, what does he pack in? Tefillin. Said, eventually you'll become 13. So you have to put on tefillin when you're 13. Now, would we do that today? With instant transportation, that wouldn't happen. But in those days, it was actually mekubal. It wasn't, God forbid, going ahead and trying to torture your children. So they packed his suitcase, they let him go, he goes into a yeshiva in Minsk, and he gets tested, and this is a very interesting story. They test him, they see he knows, and then they say, but how can we accept you? You're not even bar mitzvah. And says Rav Yaakov, I came here to learn Torah. I didn't come to make a minyan. They accepted him to the yeshiva. Now, I say this is an interesting topic because what he basically said was a cynical comment, but one that A, showed, hey, this guy knows, he's, you know, 2 feet on the ground, and B, because of it, Baruch Hashem, he was let in and he learned Torah. And this happened later in life too, and I'll tell you the following other story about him. When he was later on the Gadol B'Yisrael he was, and people came to him for advice, someone asked him the following question. This is not printed in the Art Scroll book or in this book. I heard this from a lecture from a third individual. Here is the story. A guy comes to him and says, there's two doctors. One is Shomer Shabbos and the other is non-Shomer Shabbos. Which doctor should I go to? Answers Rav Yaakov, the better doctor. Whoever's better, whoever's the bigger mumche, whoever knows more, you should go to. We're not dealing here with getting a psak halacha. We're dealing here with medical treatment. So this guy, as is the custom of very annoying yeshiva bachers, or I would say very annoying graduates of certain yeshivas, and they're all yeshivas, there's always one that's like this. It happened from the time of the Gemara till today. You heard in the Gemara of the famous Rav Yirmiyah and Baba Batra, right? If there's a chicken and the chicken is between two coops, then it belongs to the coop that's closer. But what happens if it's exactly in the middle? You have 50 amos this way, 50 amos this way, and the chicken's right in the middle. What did they answer him? They threw him out. You don't ask stupid questions in the base measures. Now, what is the sikui? What is the probability that's going to happen? The chicken's exactly in the middle, doesn't move, you know? Zitzavek, the chicken's going to sit here, 50 amos this way, 50 amos this way, they threw him out. There's always one annoying person. So after getting that answer, he decides to continue, right? And says, yeah, but let's say they're equal. Well, if they're equal, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says, why don't you go to the Shomer Shabbos one? You know, he probably loses a little money on Shabbos for not working and for Yontif, it's 2 days Yontif in Chutz Laaretz, go to him. Okay, annoying question number three now. Yeah, but you know, if you're a doctor, you're probably not a Ben Taira. A Ben Taira is someone that listens to his Rosh Yeshiva. And in our world, the Yeshiva Shevelt, we don't encourage people to become doctors. You know, Kohanim can't become doctors because it's too much mate. And then regular people should become doctors. It's not exactly what we encourage. Accountants are okay. Computer programmers, fine. But doctors is not what the Yeshiva Shevelt encourages. So maybe this guy is not the highest Shomer Shabbos in the world. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says to him, well, Baruch Hashem, we have Jews who are Shomrei Shabbos that don't listen to rabbis because they don't listen to rabbis, we have good doctors. Story number three, again, being cynical but being helpful. So the first story was I was cynical in order to learn Torah. The second story is I'm cynical in order to give person the proper medical treatment and tell him to stop asking stupid questions, right? Here comes the third story along the same lines. Now, you have to remember, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was a card-carrying member of Agudat Yisrael. One of the basic theologies of Agudat Yisrael is Das Teira. Das Teira means whatever the rabbis say is kadosh. It's nevuah plus, right? It can be on politics, what car you buy. You listen to the rabbis on everything. If you ever want to see the most extreme position of this, the one who expressed it was, anyone? Rav Soloveitchik. But this is before he moved over to Mizrahi. Namely, before the Holocaust was over, he was a card-carrying member of Aguda. And in 1941, there was a big Aguda convention, big of America in that time, of the Orthodox community, in a place called Cincinnati. Who was the rabbi in Cincinnati? Rabbi Silver. Rabbi Silver was a Litvak. He couldn't pronounce, as you know, the Litvaks can't say shin. They say sin. So it's Rasi, Agutzabis. So when it comes to Cincinnati, that's a problem. So he called it Cincinnati. So in Cincinnati, he made an Aguda convention. And they maspid Rav Chaim Oizer Grzynski, who just died. And Rav Yar and Rav Soloveitchik gave a hesped called Atzitzva Acholshen, saying we have to listen to the rabbis on everything and anything that moves. He changed his position afterwards. But of course, when Aguda goes ahead and quotes it, it doesn't say, well, he changed his position afterwards. In any case, he was a God-carrying member of Aguda. And yet, he was able to say, it's a good thing they don't always listen to rabbis. Now we're going to give a third story along those lines. Have you heard of Rav Shalom Gold? Rav Shalom Gold was my first rabbi in Israel. An amazing individual. He should live and be well. He lost his wife, I think, a year and a half ago or 2 years ago. Rav Shalom Gold wants to make Aliyah. He's a rabbi in the Young Israel of West Hempstead. He wants to make Aliyah. It's towards the 80s, and he decided he can't make this move without getting a blessing from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he writes a letter to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I am making Aliyah, I would love your bracha. Now the Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't exactly understand that he wasn't asking, should I make Aliyah? He says, I want your bracha. So what did the Lubavitcher Rebbe write back? It's absolutely forbidden for you to make Aliyah because you are a rabbi functioning in America. And even if you leave and there's a replacement for your shul, we need 20 more like you because you're a good rabbi. And that was the Lubavitcher Rebbe's position. He wasn't alone. Rav Soloveitchik thought the same thing. And therefore, when his students made aliyah who were rabbis, he also didn't like it. Make a long story short, that's not the topic today. Rabbi Gold is distraught. I mean, the Lubavitcher Rebbe told him not to make aliyah. He doesn't know what to do. So he goes to his former Rosh Yeshiva from Torah Vadas, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas from 1945 till 1967. In 1967 he left and he retired, quote unquote, to Muncie. The reason was a lot of machlokes in Torah Vadas, which is the topic for a different time. Make a long story. Oh, you know about this. Okay. Oh, so you'll explain to me the machlokes because I want to hear. No, I heard versions. I never heard the story from the inside. Because every time I mention it to someone, someone says to me something cynical and walks away. In any case, he goes to see him and he tells him I sent him a letter, which I didn't ask for permission, but unfortunately, he wrote this back. And what can I do? And you know, it reminds me of a Gemara in Ksubos, says Rabbi Gold. The end of Ksubos, the Gemara says that you're allowed to divorce your wife and not give her a ketubah if you want to make aliyah, and she doesn't. And there, that's where the Gemara says you should always live in Israel, even in a place which is all goyim, and not live in Borough Park where everyone's a Shomer Shabbos, right? And within that Gemara, there's a following story. I forgot who were the two rabbis. One rabbi was trying not to meet the other rabbi. You know, he was walking down the street, he saw the rabbi coming, all of a sudden he had to go to the bathroom. You know, he came into shul, he saw the rabbi was in the minyan, he went to the other minyan. Why? Because he was making aliyah, and his rabbi was against him making aliyah, because he said we have to stay in Babel until HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings Mashiach. Sounds familiar? Okay. So in the Gemara, we have this story at the end of Ksubos. So he stayed away from this rabbi. So Rabbi Gold mentions this to Rabbi Yaakov in his conversation. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky smiles and says, you see, Rabbi Shalom, he was smarter than you. So what do you mean he was smarter than me? He knew not to ask a rabbi, but you were stupid enough to ask. Now again, why do I say these cynical stories? Because I think that we sometimes, again, we say the word cynicism, we always think negative.
Are those stories in the book?
No. Their cynicism is negative. The story about the tefillin is in here, about the bar mitzvah. The second and the third story are not, for obvious reasons. But the bottom line is, cynicism can sometimes be helpful. They're not always a terrible thing. But again, it depends what you're doing. Are you trying to help the person, or are you trying to put him down? If you're trying to put him down, it's terrible. If you're trying to help the person, it could be very positive. So that's the first thing I wanted to say about Rav Yaakov, a sharp mind. Number two, originality. Rav Yaakov learned, as I said, in Minsk, there was no supervision. He also learned, when he was a kid in his village, there was no supervision, and his father wasn't a rabbi. You know what was good about that? When you have no supervision, you're original. You're original. See, if you're in a yeshiva with a very strict curriculum, there's not much you can do. In many yeshivas, they learn Nashim and Nezikim. Namely, they learn a few mesechtas from Seder Nashim, mainly Gittin and Kiddushin, maybe Ksubos, maybe Yevamot. I say maybe because it's hard. And in Seder Nezikim, they learn Baba Batra, Baba Metzia, Baba Kama, maybe a Sanhedrin. And that's all. And basically, there's a lot of sugyas, as you know, from other places in Shas. But the bottom line is, they learn other things. Now, we don't learn Tanakh, of course, because Tanakh, that will make you, I would say, guilty of two things. You may be called a Zionist, you may be called a Maskil. So Tanakh is a bad thing. Now, Rav Yaakov didn't have a curriculum. So therefore, he was original. He learned Tanakh backwards and forwards. Backwards and forwards. He learned Mesechtes and Shas that nobody learned. He learned books that nobody really touched in yeshiva's world. Now, he was a great gadol when he eventually made it to Salabotka, where they learned Nashim and Nezikim, even in those realms. But he was original. And my second point today is that we have to follow the dictum of Chazal. What does Chazal say about learning Torah? What's the secret of success in learning Torah? Good, no one answered. There is no the secret of success. There's a famous perek in Pirkei Avot called Perek Kinyan Torah. How do you buy your Torah? How do you acquire Torah? There is 48 ways. One of the ways of the 48 is En Adam Lamed Ela B'Makom Shelibo Chafetz. You only learn what your heart desires. So whoever comes to this shir, knows who the lecturer is, know where it takes place, they, I'm assuming, want to learn. But You can't force someone to learn what they don't want. And I think that's a very important message educationally today. I've seen, I would say, the damage of telling someone, don't learn this, it's not good enough, open a Gemara. I was once in a certain community I won't mention, and I met the rabbi. And the rabbi told me about his own son, that his own son wanted to learn the book Nefesh HaRav, written by Rav Shechter, about Rav Soloveitchik. And his father said, not good enough, you have to learn Gemara. That you can learn on the side. It turned out that kid eventually left the path and no longer is religious. Some of them will become religious through Nefesh HaRav. Some people will stay in the fold because they learned Chumash with Rashi, which we are obligated to do every week. To go along and to make a blanket statement, there's a objective way of learning Torah, that's just not true. And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was one of those many examples. He was original. Now, when he went to Salabotka, I really met him because Salabotka was unique. There was an altar of Salabotka. Have you heard of him? Rav Natan Tzvi Finkel. He really ran the yeshiva. And what was unique about him is he told each student what he needs, never had an objective point of view. He used to scream at this student for doing something wrong, and that student he would make nice to when they did something wrong. Make a long story short, in that yeshiva, there was barely shiurim. They wanted each student to develop individuality. And therefore, when you look at pictures of Salabotka, what do you see? Well, let me put it differently. When you look at a yeshiva today, any of the yeshivas in the more Haredi world, or what's called the Haredi world, Panovich, or Mir, or Brisk, what do you see? Everyone's dressed alike, correct? Okay? You can call it zebras, you can call it penguins, everyone has their terms. I'm just saying it as a descriptive term, okay? Not pejorative. But, bottom line is, they all look alike. Look at pictures of Salabotka, you know what was amazing? Each person dressed differently. There were gray suits, brown suits. The problem is these pictures are not necessarily in color, but today with technology, they're able to bring out the color again. You could see each person dressed differently. Each person learned differently. Yes, they learned the same Masechta. There was like a shiur once a week for a very short time. That was it. So each person can develop their own individuality in learning Torah. And Adam Lamed, Ela B'Makom Sheli Bo Chafetz. And indeed, if you read Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's book called Emet Liyakov, his Perushim on Shas, his Perushim on the Parsha, I see things there I don't see anywhere. They're so individual, they're so original. And again, they're not bombastic. Wow, what a mind. It's simple. And the way he spoke was simple. The problem is he spoke in Yiddish. So if you even go to videos on YouTube, you don't understand. But the bottom line was, it's simple. And he writes things like, when I watched this on TV, I thought of this Rashi. No one would print that today. Right? He would say original things that no one else said, not because they were, wow, what a mind. It was just being original. And we have to encourage individuality. And some people learn better this way, and some people learn better that way. And he was the chief in this regard. And I'll just tell you one, and then I'll hear you. When he came to Toronto in 1938 to become a rabbi of a Mizrahi shul, I know the shul, it's a Mizrahi shul, okay? He was open-minded in that sense, and a member, but open-minded, didn't think Mizrahi was the end of the world. When he came there, and he started to get involved in education, he insisted they teach in English. He didn't speak English. Why did they insist on teaching English? Because the students spoke in English. Now you should know, Rav Aaron Cutler refused to speak in English or to tell his chadarim that were under his auspices to teach in English. He said Yiddish. But, he said the Torah, first of all, should not stay idle just because of Yiddish. And number two, these students need it in English. So simple. And yet, it's only someone that thinks of individuality. So the two things I said about Rav Yaakov today are very simple. Number one, cynicism is sometimes helpful. It's not always to put down the guy. And number two, individuality is very helpful in becoming a Gadol b'Yisrael. Yeah.
Question. Wasn't the Torah given in Yiddish? A young man now push a
Nice, never heard that. Lech Red. When I was in third grade, my Rebbe wasn't unique at the time. Said to us, Moshe Rabbeinu Chav Geretin mit der Erbester in Yiddish. And the problem was that all of us believed him. Because what language did he speak to God? He wouldn't speak in Hebrew. Hebrew was the halakha language you speak to God in davening. That's the language of laning. You wouldn't speak to God like that. What, he would speak in English? That's a goyish sprach. What's left? Yiddish. 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 He spoke to him in Yiddish. And that's what I thought for many years. I never heard Lech Red. That's good. Very good, Lewis. Very good, Rabbi Lewis. Excellent.
That's a real Torah.
Lech Red. Gay Red.
Rabbi, my teacher, Alav Shalom, was a student, prize student of Rav Kotler,
Alav
Shalom.
Of Rav?
Rav Kotler.
Rav Aaron Kotler.
And he spoke, my rabbi, who passed away, he spoke many languages. He spoke German as well. He was Sephardic, okay? But nobody understood him as well as him. And Rav Kotler, Alav Shalom, than him. Because he knew Ramash Yiddish, and he understood it. He was only 18 years old. So he would teach him, Rav Kotler would teach him. And he would translate to the in English.
There was a different problem with Rav Kotler, that he spoke at the speed of light, yeah. And he was very, very, he spoke to the geniuses.
Right.
And therefore you needed people to explain it to others. And if you ever disagreed with him, as was the custom in Lithuania, there was a screaming match with curses. God bless. I've never seen such a thing. And it would go on. There's descriptions. They write in books about Rav Aaron Kotler. Descriptions of what would happen. They get so mad. The guy would get so mad at him, the student would leave the class. And Rav Kotler was still screaming at him after he left the class. And he said, throw him out. They said, but the Rebbe, he already left. Get him back in here and throw him out. And that was what happened. Okay, gentlemen. With this, we end for today. I hope that this new particular format was a little different and maybe more helpful, and I'd love to hear your feedback about it. All the very best. Have a good day.
One comment. When I was in school in Europe, it was all in Yiddish.
Of course.
Not in English.
I had teachers that they spoke to us in Ivrit. That was the language of instruction. But Arthur, when they got upset or very happy, their essence was Yiddish. Okay? For example, I had a teacher, when kids in the class were going ahead and, disrupting the class, you know, we're going ahead and talking. If he got very mad, he would say in Yiddish, B'nei Korach lo metu. The children of Korach didn't die. Avi is the kindle from Korach. Where are the children of Korach? They're sitting right in front of me right here. And he would say it in Yiddish, and only a select few would laugh. And the kids that actually were disrupting never understood him. Rabbi, what did you say? It's not important.
Hi, everybody. Now I understand.